Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our producer and engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, at our brand new, beautiful world headquarters of Civic Media, high atop State Street, a block off the Capitol Square. Glad to have you along with us on a Monday. It is the 17th of July, 2023. Always happy to have you here. And beautiful. And look at that. Our CEO, Sage Weil, delivering in a beautiful new car. We say it on the air. Our CEO is already on top of it.
Yeah, I sent him a message. I was like, hey, do I see you to get a key card to get into the building? He's like, yep. Do you have a parking card already? I said, no. And then he just like made one and brought it in here.
He's fantastic. Great to have you along with us on a Monday here at our beautiful new world headquarters. And people watching the stream on Facebook and Twitter will also see our new studios here. We don't have a camera yet for Mr. Well, the camera's here for Mr. Zommers. It's just not hooked up yet. But you have this beautiful new desk and with all the electronics on it that has an end or a motor that goes like up and down. And so we were talking about this over the break. And my lovely sister, who's with my mother today, she says, Mom said, quote, boys with new toys.
You're very right.
It's exactly what it is, right? Got some new toys. So happy to have you here in our new studios. Phone number, though, still the same, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, really looking forward to this. Great writer, great author, Mike Sachs. He's the real deal. National figure from Vanity Fair and the New Yorker magazine. Going to be in, written some great entertainment and comedic articles. Mike Sachs from Vanity Fair and the New Yorker. Looking forward to interviewing him at the bottom of the hour at 2:30. Right now, though, and by the way, we after the break here, coming up in our next segment, we're going to talk about the cash on hand for these Republican presidential candidates. Of course, the first Republican presidential debate coming up in Milwaukee down at Fiserv Forum right here in Wisconsin. We'll be covering that for you as we get closer. But Ron DeSantis not doing so well. In fact, he fired about a dozen people over the weekend. And his cash on hand is all up. When you're running a campaign at any level, it's always about your COH, your cash on hand. We'll talk about who has it and who doesn't. But first, your chance to win some Milwaukee Brewers tickets. Brewers, great job this weekend sweeping the Cincinnati Reds. Really, really great baseball. And the Brewers now have a 2-game lead in the National League Central Division. You can see them this weekend. They're going to be back in town taking on the NL East leaders, the Atlanta Braves. You can sit in the club. These are not just your run-of-the-mill seats, you understand. these are really sweet club-level seats, kind of a private entry area, have bathrooms right outside the door, concession stand just for the club level. You can be there this Saturday night, first pitch, 6:15, so it's kind of an early game if you're coming from outside of Milwaukee, plenty of time to drive home safely after the game. First pitch, 6:15. And we're going to give them two tickets for this Saturday's game, the 22nd of July at 6:15 against the Braves. Two tickets to the first caller that can answer correctly to this. What Milwaukee Brewer tore a fingernail and also broke the same finger? I shouldn't laugh about it. Tore a fingernail, broke a finger, and was put on the injured reserve over the weekend. What Brewer was it? A key player for the Brewers, going to be out for a while longer. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Which Milwaukee Brewer, he was just shagging balls, and which Milwaukee Brewer got his finger caught in some netting, tore a fingernail, and is going to be out. He's having surgery on it. If you have the answer, the player's name, the first caller to call in with the correct answer wins two tickets to this weekend's game in Milwaukee. 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. Remember, you cannot have one in the last 30 days, and you need a smartphone in order to get those tickets. All right. 844-967-2789. Which Milwaukee Brewer tore a fingernail while shagging balls, actually broke the end of his finger, has to have surgery, going to be out for like 4 weeks now? Which Brewer was that? Let's go down to beautiful New Berlin. Jill in New Berlin, we appreciate you calling. Which Milwaukee Brewer was it that tore his nail and is out for 4 weeks?
This is just a guess, but could it be Rowdy Tellez?
You have guessed correctly. Rowdy Tellez.
Oh, my God.
You just, really? Seriously?
I just thought maybe
you just guessed?
I had to pick one.
Well, that's fantastic. Congratulations. You win the... how are you listening? Are you listening to us over the air or on the app?
On the app.
On the app. All right. Fantastic. A great way to do it. Do you have somebody... Yeah. You don't have to tell us on the air, but do you have somebody in mind to take with you to the Brewers game on Saturday?
Oh, I'll probably snag one of my brothers. They would love to go see it. So.
And who, even if the person isn't necessarily a huge baseball fan, these are the kind of seats in this club level that, you know, you don't get every day. So it's a great experience. Aaron and I have been there, and it's a wonderful time. So thank you so much for listening. Don't go anywhere, Jill. Stay on the line. Mr. Zomers will take your phone number, your email, your full name off the air, and we will email you those tickets. Just make sure that you download the Major League Baseball app as well. Back after this.
Okay, thank you.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network, pursuing truth wherever it may lead. And having fun doing it, Todd Albaugh along with Mr. Aaron Zomers, our producer and engineer. Thanks for listening. Just like Jill down in Berlin. Appreciate Jill listening on the Civic Media app. You can also take us on the go. Simply go to your app store on your iPhone or your Android phone. Doesn't matter. Type in the search bar. Under apps, type in Civic, C-I-V-I-C, Civic Media. It'll come up, takes less than a minute to download. It's free. It's what Gail King calls a deal. Great deal, as a matter of fact. You can take us with you wherever you have internet, Wi-Fi, or cellular service. Fantastic, as a matter of fact. So Jill got two tickets. She got the two tickets for this weekend's game, and we're going to give away another pair tomorrow, on tomorrow's show. So be aware of that. If you didn't win today, be listening tomorrow. Two more tickets for Saturday's game right here on the Todd Albaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. And don't forget, you can listen to the Milwaukee Brewers all season long over in the Fox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support. You can find it on 98.3 FM and the Big 1100 AM. Also in Southwest Wisconsin. My home station, WRCE, in Richland Center, Wisconsin. News from the center, 107.7 FM and 1450 AM. Milwaukee Brewers all season long right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Had a couple of people ask, can I stream the Brewers? Well, yes. The short answer is yes, if you're not in the area of one of those stations. The unfortunate part is you can't stream it on Civic. Because Milwaukee Brewers or Milwaukee, the Major League Baseball has the rights to the stream. So sadly, I'm sorry you can't. But if you're in Southwest Wisconsin or the eastern part of the state, listen to us on Oshkosh Air Support or WRCE News from the Center. Talking in last hour, I want to finish up a couple of comments here on this No Labels Party. Appreciate y'all for listening in and commenting. Those who wrote in on the text line on the app. Someone just said here that No Labels, I'd say they do not want Trump. They want to keep or gain new tax cuts. Biden won't use tax cuts to benefit the rich Republican gazillionaires. All right. That's from Minneapolis, Minnesota, as a matter of fact. Appreciate those listening over in the Twin Cities. Also, in Eau Claire, WCFW, one of our brand new stations, The Tap in Eau Claire. Saying, quote, nothing like moving in as you're on the air. I think each segment should be from a new angle of the room. It says, looking great. Congrats on the new dig. Speaking of our new headquarters here above State Street off the Capitol Square, we appreciate that as well. Listener up there in Eau Claire, in from Green Bay, WCBW, or pardon me, try that again, Todd. Take two. WGBW in Green Bay, one of our newer stations as well. This person says, speaking of Mr. Perry, who said he was up there in Canada, this person also said they just got back from a fishing trip with his son, or with their son, to Canada. About 11 and a half hours from Green Bay. The air quality was also perfect there all week. Well, I guess we should take this show to Green Bay, Mr. Sommers. Or to Canada, rather. Thanks for the kind words. They say, love the show and what Civic Media is doing for our state. Also, P.S., Joe Lieberman is the guy who supported McCain and sold out nationwide health care for all. He's a right-wing guy who will take the money for himself and not help the people. No to no labels. It is a scam. All right. Well, that's a take as well. I don't know that Joe Lieberman is quite that nefarious, but perhaps. As one of the callers said, I think the original creators of No Labels were doing it for the right reasons. As it got further down the road, it was infested with Trump mega folks. And again, if you want to know what's going on in politics, all you got to do is look at the money. The money trail. That will tell you everything you need to know. As someone who ran campaigns, who ran for office, well, city council, but also ran for state assembly a couple of times, it's all about, they call it COH, cash on hand. And right now, the alarm bells are ringing for Ron Puddingfingers DeSantis. And what my friends say, lay off the pudding fingers a little bit. But I said, I enjoy it because it makes me laugh. And it's true. I'm not saying anything is not true. You understand? The man eats. He's been spotted. He's been photographed. He eats Jell-O pudding cups with his three middle fingers instead of getting a spoon. Who does that? Unless you're 2 years old. And we all eat pizza with our hands. Corn on the cob. But this guy eats like spaghetti, potatoes, Jell-O with his hands. It might not matter. Alarm bells, according to CNN, are sounding for DeSantis as the first full financial look at the 2024 presidential race came into focus over the weekend as candidates filed campaign finance reports with federal regulators. Highlights a problem for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. And also, he fired about a dozen people over the weekend. Just said, that's it, firing them. Trying to change up his team. And this is going to illustrate for you a couple of things. Follow the money, as we've been saying, but also look at how things are reported. So if you want to just look at cash on hand, here's the person, of course, leading the pack, Donald Trump, has $22.5 million in the bank right now, cash on hand. Guess who the second person is? I'd ask Mr. Sommers, but a friend of ours was in and told us the answer to this a little while ago. I verified it. Not that I thought he was wrong. Senator, U.S. Senator Tim Scott has the second most, and it's pretty close. He has $21.5 million cash on hand. Then it drops all the way down to DeSantis at $12.2 million. Number four, a bit of a surprise. Vivek Ramaswamy at $9 million and former Governor Nikki Haley, $6.8 million cash on hand. Now, CNN is going to report this and say, how much money did they take in the second quarter? And if you look at how much money came in, DeSantis leads, 20.1, Trump at 17, then Doug Burgum, the governor from North Carolina, North Dakota, took in $11.8 million. Then Vivek Ramaswamy, then Tim Scott. So that's how much money they took in. But in politics, it really doesn't matter how much you take in. It's how much cash you have on hand. And in that, it is clear to weigh Donald Trump at 22.5. So that's how it's being reported. Now, also in this same article, there's a subheadline that says Biden takes frugality to a new level. Let me read you this. Despite talking, this is from CNN, despite talking up the big numbers he's raised with the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, Biden's campaign is a bare bones operation. His new filing shows a slow start that's sure to only deepen worries among some Democrats after the president's reelection preparedness. The Biden campaign, which officially launched in April, spent, keyword spent, just $1.1 million in the second quarter and employed exactly four staffers. By contrast, in the same window, in 2011, President Barack Obama's campaign had spent more than $11 million on his reelection effort. Now, remember, when talking about the Republicans, they're talking about how much money they raised and their cash on hand. But then they switch over to Biden, and they want to talk about how much the guy spent in the last quarter. All right? What they don't tell you is that if you go over to CBS News, great reporter Ed O'Keefe over at CBS, he actually tells you how much money Biden has cash on hand. Any idea what you want to, any guesses, Mr. Zomers? Cash on hand for Joe Biden right now?
$13. No, a real guess. I'm going to say $30 million. I have no idea if that's realistic or not.
Remember, Trump leads all Republicans with cash on hand at 22.5.
Well, he leads the Republicans.
Right.
They tend to have more money in modern day. So you know what? I'll say $17
million. Yeah. Joe Biden, his reelection campaign, cash on hand, $77 million.
Wow. Guess Trump's busy spending all his money on legal fees.
That's exactly it. Joe Biden, Uncle Joe, has $77 million cash on hand in the bank. Now, part of that was raised through the DNC.
I think this
is... But his cash on hand is $77 million.
I think this is the same thing that happened with our new Supreme Court justice here, where the Democratic Party thought, you know what? Here we are. We're going to play by your rules. We're just going to dump endless amounts of money into it and also have better ideas, and we'll see what happens.
Well, I mean, it's astounding to me how things were reported, right? And this is where mainstream media gets a bad name. People that are on this CNN article, I don't recognize any of them as being big names. Staff writers, I assume. But the editors, how can you write a story and for the Republicans, you use how much money they've spent and raised, how much they've raised and how much they have cash on hand. So for Republicans, it's raised and cash on hand. And then you switch over to Biden and they want to talk about how much money he spent and try to spin this as, oh my gosh, people are worried because he only spent $1.5 million. He has $77 million. Three times what Trump has, cash on hand. Mr. Zomers is right. Democrats have woken up. For years, Republicans outspent Democrats. Democrats woke up and said, you know what? We remember, it was Democrats, and there were some people like John McCain who went with Wisconsin U.S. Senator Russ Feingold for the McCain-Feingold Act, which was found unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court and Citizens United, which limited spending. And Republicans kept winning. But then after Citizens United, Democrats said, well, fine, we'll play by the rules Republicans gave us. And guess what? Democrats are winning. Joe Biden is winning, not just with the economy, but also with raising money and cash on hand. And by the way, if you're a Republican, or if you're somebody out there saying, oh, Trump isn't, you know, he's not going to be the nominee. DeSantis, as we like to say in politics, is toast. It's done. It's over. Firing 12 campaign staffers, only got $12 million cash on hand. DeSantis may be lucky to make it to Iowa. I think he'll make it to Wisconsin next month. I think. But we'll see. Stay with it. Coming back, going to have a great interview. Really looking forward to this. Mike Sachs of Vanity Fair and also The New Yorker. He's a podcaster. He's an author. He's a writer. Going to come back and talk with him. His podcast is called Doing It with Mike Sachs. That's a catchy phrase, right? Catchy name for a podcast?
It is.
Doing it with Mike Sacks. We're going to talk about the podcast and also some of the cool people that he's interviewed. Interviewed and worked with some people on Saturday Night Live and others. So always great to get a national perspective on entertainment and writing. Mike Sacks after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide, the Civic Media app. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. Glad to have you along on this Monday. Mr. Aaron Zommer is our producer and engineer in our brand new studio, still kind of working out some of the kinks. Mr. Zommer doesn't even have a camera yet, kind of like the voice of God microphone over there.
Hey, you down there. Cut it out.
But now we can see each other. We used to be separated by an actual wall. Now we have a proper window.
It's pretty nice. We don't have to rely on the camera in order to be able to make any kind of visual contact. Like now, if, for example, Todd's microphone is off, he can just wave me down. Right. And if Todd's microphone is off and he doesn't know it, I can wave him down.
We can, yeah, send hand signals or whatever. No signals needed other than to sit back, relax, and enjoy yourself for our very first guest here in our brand new studios. Mike Sacks joins us. He is with Vanity Fair and New Yorker Magazine. Great writer, great author, great podcast. His latest book is called Welcome to Woodmont College, and also Randy, the full and complete unedited biography and memoir of the amazing life and times of Randy S. He has a fantastic podcast with a fantastic name called Doing It. Mr. Mike Sacks, welcome in.
We're all doing it today, aren't we?
But so who doesn't love to do it? That's my point. It's a great name for a show.
Well, especially in a fresh studio like that. I mean, the smell in there alone must be delicious.
I do love like a new studio smell.
I can smell it from here.
If only radio were smell-o-vision or smell-listening.
Well, actually, I don't think we'd want to smell most radio.
Well, and you started. We were talking a little bit before we came on the air, and you started in radio, correct?
I did. I went to Tulane in New Orleans, and I lived there for a number of years, and I worked at WTUL 91.5 on your mega set. That's alternative radio and also jazz. I used to play a lot of jazz and blues. Yeah.
Did you ever, obviously New Orleans, the birth of jazz. Do you ever have any artists come in and get to interview anybody in person like that?
Yeah, we had Fishbone. Remember Fishbone?
Yeah, remember the name. Yeah,
boy, they were really, they were not right in their minds. And that was the most, I don't know if that can be found anywhere in the basement of WTUL, but if you can find that, good luck to you trying to understand what went on in that interview.
I always like to kind of find out where people came from, what inspired them to get into whatever business they're in. So you grew up in the South. Is that kind of where you grew up? And how did you get into writing and I guess choose between writing and broadcasting?
I really, my biggest dream was to write for David Letterman, Late Night with David Letterman. Mm-hmm. That was my biggest dream. And I didn't know how to do that because I didn't know any writers and I didn't know anyone who knew any writers. So I thought that writing was like baseball, and that I was a huge baseball fan. And I thought it was like baseball in the sense that you are in the minor leagues and then you work hard and then you get called up. Mm-hmm. I honestly thought that. So I put out articles and books on my own because that was all I could really do. I didn't have a video camera. I didn't have connections. Mm-hmm. So I just sat alone in my room and wrote articles. And by doing that over the years, the irony is this is really what I prefer doing rather than writing for TV or for movies, writing for the page, whether it's articles or web or books. Books are really my favorite thing to write, especially humor books, which I grew up reading, like National Lampoon, Mad Magazine, Woody Allen, Gene Shepard, that sort of thing. So that was how I got into writing, and I just never really segued out of it. later on, because it just is my favorite thing to do. I don't know if I could work with other people. I've just been used to working alone for so many years now.
Is it interesting to make the Letterman reference? Because like people of a certain age, you know, it was a big, we made a goofy Hal Gurney reference earlier on unbuttoning my shirt in this hot studio today.
Yeah.
And one of our colleagues, Jeff Perry, has the entire late night series on videotape. We went to college together with our mutual friend, wow, Chris Pauls. You opened up his kitchen cabinets, and instead of cereal and ramen noodles, he had VHS of late night.
That's actually worth a lot of money, because right? NBC was not nice to Letterman. They did not let him have access to his NBC shows when he went over to CBS. So I know of one other person who taped every show, but the fact that he did that, I think, is actually a big boon for comedy, because if you did not grow up with this, this is pre-internet, in some cases, cables, pre-everything. And it was like watching something from outer space. I had never seen anything like it. And that sensibility, that David Letterman sensibility, more specifically Chris Elliott, when he would play those roles, everything I've done in writing has really been as a character. You know, I'm playing a character writing, and I always think back to those Chris Elliott characters, because to me as a kid, I had never seen anything like that. They were incredibly bizarre, very funny, but also sad and a little frightening. That's what I try to bring into writing, is that combination where it's not just funny, but it's character based and it's also tethered to something deeper. And that really was that specific aspect of Letterman influenced me the most. Chris Elliott, when he was play those characters on the show.
Was there any kind of one in particular project or your big break where you said, wow, now that's a piece of writing that I know I can do this and get paid for it?
Well, it's interesting. You know, when you start off, you always try to emulate other people. And it was only later and I try to tell this to young students, you really do have to write how you want to do it on your own terms. And the strength of the writing will come through when you do it in your own voice, when you discover your own voice. And you can write anything. You know, when I first started off, I thought I had to write for Playboy or New Yorker, but that's just not my style. So really the first instance of things coming together for me was something I wrote just for fun, and I didn't overwrite it. And this was for McSweeney's in 1999 when Dave Eggers was still editing. And that was really the first time ever where I wrote something to my liking and my sensibility and someone else liked it. And that was a big lesson, because before that I wrote for Mad Magazine, Crack Magazine, and it was never really in my voice. And to have that freedom now to be able to write in my voice in 1999 was a huge burden off me, because they don't teach this type of writing in school. When I went to Tulane, they taught writing, but it was not the type of writing I necessarily liked. I didn't want to write short stories for Playboy or New Yorker. So to be able to write a Letterman-esque type of piece for the web really opened up everything for me.
I mean, look at you have a fantastic biography here. I could run through every single thing, but in addition to New Yorker and Vanity Fair, I mean, Esquire, GQ, McSweeney's, as you said, Vice, Maxim, Women's Health. What were you writing for Women's Health, for goodness sake?
God, it's so funny. I don't know. I've kept everything I've written. I was making fun of men, I'm sure. I would right. not in any way go after women. We're absolute disasters, men. But for a while, I was really writing a lot for magazines. This was at the height of the magazine. And I did so many pieces, and they meant so little that at a certain point, and I would say 5-6 years ago, I just sort of had an epiphany where it's like, I don't want to do this anymore. These are pieces that go bad pretty quickly. They sort of enter the ether and just disappear. And I wanted to work on different things, something that had a little more substance. And that was really when I first started putting out my own books. And, you know, they're bizarre enough that no one publisher would want to put them out. So I got into self-publishing. And that was another turning point about 5-6 years ago.
And now with the advent, I mean, do you think that the pandemic propelled some of this ability to, whether it's music or whether it's podcasting or whether it's writing, do you think the pandemic helped people like you who were already professionals do it on your own? Or did it just kind of flood the market? And you're like, holy crap, there's just these idiots out here that think they're writers, and it's harder to cut through.
Well, what's surprising to me is I always thought that writing for print would go the way of the CB radio, that no one would be interested in learning how to write comedy for print. What shocks me, and you mentioned COVID, I think it got even more extreme after COVID, was the intensity and the desire from a lot of young writers to write for the page, not necessarily to write for TV, not to write for movies, but to write humorous pieces for the page. And I'm seeing really young writers now, people who, kids who discovered one of my, or two of my books, interview books, and Here's the Kicker and Poking a Dead Frog, when they were just in high school or junior high school. And that to them became an influence. And it just was shocking to me that the love for writing for the page, because it's a very specific talent and it takes a long, long time. And quite frankly, it doesn't bring in that much money attention. So the fact that this many people are this interested in doing it really is, it just kind of surprised me. But, you know, I absolutely love it. I mean, this is my first love.
People who listen to this show know the appreciation and the awe I have for writers. I don't care whether it's an article, whether it's a novel, a song, a comedy sketch, a movie, people who can write well. I mean, that is just a God-given universal talent, in my opinion. What do you make of this strike right now for the Writers Guild and the Actors Guild, but in particular for the writers? I mean, to think that somehow AI can you might be able to get some boilerplate stuff from AI, artificial intelligence, but you can never, in my opinion, capture the human nuance.
No, definitely not. Not when it comes to comedy. I mean, I said this before and they thought I was joking, but I am not joking when I say this. AI, until you stayed at home at prom watching Monty Python or Albert Brooks or Steve Martin, right, until you did that, you're not capable of writing humor. There's a sadness that I think you need, certainly a humanity tethered to something out there that AI in a million years wouldn't be able to produce. Now, I think AI can produce documents. I think it can produce maybe mediocre poetry, but the genius, the leaps that comedy take, that is so personal and so human-based, I can't imagine AI ever taking over. Now, with that said, actually, I passed a group who were picketing earlier today in Manhattan, and I just, you know, gave them hats off because I totally, I love what they're doing, and they're 100% in the right. I mean, a lot of people feel that getting into TV writing, it will bring you in a lot of riches. The vast majority barely survive, and it's just getting worse and worse. And the fact that they had to put their foot down, both the actors and the writer, it's not easy for these writers out there. I mean, they're literally going months without pay. But what astonishes me is when you watch television, when you listen to podcasts, when you do a tremendous amount of work goes in that, into each show. Beyond that, a tremendous amount of writing experience. I mean, each joke that you see on a sitcom, that's someone honing their craft for many, many years. And this is someone who decided to get into writing, who didn't go to business school, who didn't go to law school, who didn't go to medical school. They took a chance in life. They went off the path. And for them to be treated like this, like temps or interns by the very people who sort of put us down and held us down in high school, is, to me, is just infuriating.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And we have to, in my opinion, recognize this human talent. And I think, as Fran Drescher said, on the actor side, this is a domino effect. It's not just about writers and actors. If a stand isn't taken here, this becomes a domino effect for people in radio. People, I mean, for every walk of life, our computers are just going to take over.
No, absolutely. And it's not just for comedy. It's a lack of respect for anything, whether it's intelligence or scientific knowledge, or being, or knowing literature, or knowing this. I mean, there seems to be a real feeling that it's only those who are beneath you who are able to do this, or who would even want to do it. Mm-hmm. A feeling that if someone wants to get into writing and they're not going to make a money, that they're fools and that they should be taken advantage of. I see it across the board. And it's not just with writing for TV or books, whatever it is. I see it across just for basic human respect for creativity and artistry. And it's really, to me, it's terrifying. And I think that I'm praying that strike will help the writers and the actors, but I fear what's going to come even beyond that.
About 90 seconds before we take our first break here, and we're talking to Mike Sachs right now from Vanity Fair, and also New Yorker, and a great author as well. One of the books, Welcome to Woodmont College, and also Randy, give us the setup on those, and we'll come back and talk about them, Mike.
Right. Well, the Woodmont College is a pure parody, which I grew up reading. One of my favorite books was National Lampoon High School Yearbook, which was a parody of a yearbook and a literary magazine. And the other book is a fake found object that I supposedly found at a garage sale in Poolsville, Maryland, there where I grew up. And it's written by a very mediocre 30-something about a very mediocre life. And I love mediocrity, writing about it, and I love absolute garbage. So I hope that I hit both of those streams in writing that one.
Well, you've come to the right radio program, because if nothing, we strive for mediocrity here.
So. I love it here. I feel so at home. Love you guys.
Oh, that's fantastic. This is Mike Sachs, a great author. His books, Welcome to Woodmont College, and Randy, going to come back and talk about those. Also talk about the great podcast called Doing It. You're going to want to do it too. Don't go anywhere on the other side. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show across the state of Wisconsin and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. If you don't have the app, you can download it. Simply go to your smartphone store, either in Android or Apple, and type in Civic, C-I-V-I-C, Civic Media. It takes about a minute. It is free. It's what Gail King calls a deal. Well, at least about CBS Morning. She doesn't talk about our show like that, but I call it a deal too, the Civic Media app, and you can hear great, of course, you can get our podcast at civicmedia.us. Great people that we interview, like Mike Sachs, who is with us today. He is with Vanity Fair and New York Magazine, or The New Yorker, I should say. And talking about some of these books, you're also a great author, Mike. And talking about these books, you set it up before. I want to go back, and I can't find it now, of course. I read it earlier in my prep notes, but somebody once said of you, to paraphrase it, you're the best worst writer out there, or the best writer of bad stuff. And I thought that was a brilliant quote.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. I sort of fell into this doing it for the web, just writing poorly on purpose. And what I loved
really?
About
like on,
it was...
on purpose? You intentionally
on
wrote...
On purpose.
That's hilarious.
And the margin of error is so much larger when you do something like this. I mean, to me, it's almost like writing something as a character actor would, but I'm a character right. author. So to be able to play an author who's not very good, but then to make it interesting and good, to me, I love doing. And I've done that over a few projects over the years. But I did that recently with Randy, which is supposedly a memoir I found at a garage sale, paid $1 for. Now, the premise behind Randy was that I always wanted to do to modernize a Medici type of situation, who a very rich person who hires an arts patron to make them look good, but they're a total disaster, but to do it in the present day. So this rich guy in Maryland, Randy, he's 30-something years old. His grandmother died and gave him the land that the farm was on. He turned it into a condo development and made a lot of money. He lives at a townhome at the top of the hill. He hires an out-of-work actor to write his story, and his story is very mediocre. He really hasn't accomplished much, but I love the combination of a very purplish writing, very grandiose writing with a very mediocre life. That sort of made me laugh. So that's sort of the premise behind Randy.
I think it's great. And when you write something like this, I mean, some writers try to pull things out of their past, like you say, whether it's tragedy or sadness or whatever. Is this something that was anywhere loosely based on any sort of an experience, or you were just like having a couple of drinks and you're like, this could be fun, you started writing it?
That's a very good question. No, I worked retail in Virginia and D.C. and Maryland for 10 years off and on. And I knew a lot of these guys that I became very friendly with. I played softball with them. I went out drinking with. And they're a very specific type. And Randy is that type. Not necessarily academic oriented. They're not going to go home and watch a black and white movie on the Criterion Channel. But we had a lot in common just over sports and having fun. They're very fun. And I love these guys, and I sort of miss them. I mean, I've lived in New York now for over 20 years, but I miss that very Maryland, you know, the type you would see in Ocean City, Maryland, or Virginia Beach. It's just a certain look. And I just had a lot of fun with them. So this was that type of person. This is someone who didn't necessarily go to college, but likes to have a good time, maybe isn't as smart as he thinks he is, but knows everyone at Hoops, the local sports bar, and can talk about the Capitals and the Wizards and the Nationals and the Orioles. So that was really, it was kind of me being nostalgic for that. And quite frankly, I've lived in New York now for 20 years. What I really know is New Orleans and the DC area, Virginia. I mean, that's that's where my heart is. I don't really know much even to this day about New York City, but that area where I grew up is very comfortable for me. I know it very well.
Other book was is called Welcome to Woodmont College. Give us the quick synopsis on that and what people might like about it.
Well, I love strict parity. I don't see much out there anymore because agents and publishers aren't necessarily interested in them, which is why I self-published this. But I wanted to do a strict parity of a college catalog. I love the type of writing in a college catalog while also satirizing the world of colleges. So this is a boutique college that I think costs $75,000 a semester where anyone can get in. And as you go through the book and you read about the history, it's an absolute disaster, many deaths, hauntings, horrible things happening. I just love getting all that history into a product that someone would hopefully confuse with the real product.
This podcast, which I love, and I could try to sound impressive and say, oh, I've listened to it. It sounds fantastic. Or I could just say, between all the movie, I haven't had a chance to listen to it. So I'll just be honest and say that. But I love the name of it. Doing it is fantastic. And I think it's what. So what are you interviewing people on the podcast? Is it more kind of a give and take? What can people expect if they dial up doing it?
Three things. One is advice that I have learned over the years and also that I have interviewed people about. I put out two books of interviews with comedy writers, established comedy writers. So really, if you're young or you want to improve your station as a writer, a comedy writer, these are things to do and perhaps not do. Also, the second thing is people that I grew up loving that may not be that well known today. I just did a little segment on Gene Shepard for the last episode, things in comedy that I sort of out there that people may not know in the mainstream, and then interviews. And I try to go after, people in comedy or just people who interest me, whether it's Bill Hader or Bob Odenkirk or even, an author who wrote a book about UFOs, just whoever interests me. There's no pressure to interview people. And it's just anyone who I want to have an excuse to talk with.
I mean, going through the list of some of these people on the podcast, like you say, Bill Hader, Patton Oswalt was on there as well, a few other people like that. I'm just like, man, these are names that you aren't necessarily, the top of the marquee, but they're people that other comedians and writers have a lot of respect for. And I think you can learn so much when you listen to people like that.
Oh, absolutely. And that was my goal with both of those books. And you put it very, very well. I didn't want to go after people who were necessarily everyone knew were top names. I went after people whose work I really respected.
There you
and,
go.
And some of those names the readers weren't familiar with, but hopefully came to know them and their work through those books.
I think that's so important because there's nothing wrong. We need those big name people, I guess, out there and everybody knows them and a lot of them do good work. But so often it's the middle gal or the middle guy who is doing really good work, but doesn't for whatever reason get the notoriety. And they're the people that really have the brains to put it all together.
Well, absolutely. And using that example, the next person I want to talk about for the episode is Meryl Marco, who put together the very early version of Late Night, even when it was a morning show. And she's been, I don't want to say forgotten because she's beloved. She wins awards. But I don't know if young writers know the influence that she had on an entire generation of comedy writers and the her strength as a comedy writer and how much she influenced David Letterman's style. Yeah. So that's a perfect example of, yes, I mean, she may not be, her books may not be being sold in airport bookstores, but to me and to people in comedy, her work means a tremendous amount.
Well, I'm going to add it to my podcasting list. I will be listening to it. It's called Doing It with Mike Sachs. Great podcast. And the book's out right now. Welcome to Woodmont College and Randy. Two fantastic reads as well. Mike, thank you for being with us. Really, really appreciate your time. Welcome back here anytime. We'd love to talk to you again.
Oh, I love it. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, everyone. This is just, I love live and I love radio and I now love Wisconsin.
Hey, so
thank you for having me.
MikeSachs.com is where you can find all his work as well. We'll have that up on our show notes. Mr. Zomers will put it up there. Stay tuned now for our friend Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn Direct. Don't go anywhere. See you tomorrow. Until then, this is Todd Allbaugh on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, whatever you're fighting for, keep banging your drum.